This is Scotty Saltzman, and this is Saltzman Tape 2010-003. This is an interview with Miss Darla Saylor Jackson. We're here at the Cumberland Falls State Park, and I'm interviewing Darla for the Kentucky Native American Heritage Commission Oral History Project. So, Darla, thank you for being part of this interview today. And so, kind of start out and tell us a little bit about yourself, and we'll just take it from there.
Well, I am a lifelong resident of Harlan County, Kentucky. I'm an artist and teaching artist. I am an Appalachian and Native American dancer, and I also teach Appalachian and Native American dance in schools. I get residencies and visit schools.
And when you say Native American, do you belong to, does your family heritage come from a particular tribe or group of folks?
Yes, my family are all Cherokee. There seems to be just a bit of Creek also in there, but it's mainly Cherokee, and I'm also affiliated with the Piquashani that I'm enrolled with.
Okay, so how did you find out about your Native American heritage?
Well, that was something that I just always knew. My grandparents were very proud of who they were, and they really loved to talk about their Cherokee heritage. So I can't remember not knowing that I was Native American. I was always identified as that because I look Native American. And my family, because they always had the very strong appearance of being Native American, they were just always identified as Cherokee.
Okay, when you said your grandparents were very proud of their Native heritage, who were your grandparents?
When I speak of my grandparents, I'm speaking of my maternal grandparents, and my grandfather was Isaiah Saylor, and my grandmother was Mossy Mosley Saylor. Isaiah and Mossy both were Cherokee, and they were actually both Cherokee from the Hawkins County, Tennessee area. They themselves were from Harlan County, but their families were from Tennessee, and they moved in during the Civil War.
Oh, okay. And being that they were Cherokee, then that heritage passed down on the maternal side. Was that the traditions that they followed?
Or? It is, yes. It is actually, it was strongly on my maternal side, and those were the grandparents that I identified with. My father is also Cherokee, but just to a lesser degree. And I really didn't get a lot of my heritage from that side because I never met my grandmother. She had already passed away when I was born.
Okay. And so let me ask you, today, how do you as a Native American person make connections with your cultural roots?
Well, many years ago when my son was very small, my husband and I decided to actually live as traditional Native American as we possibly can. What we didn't know about our family, we began researching it. What we didn't know about our culture, which was quite a bit, we began researching it. We became affiliated with a tribe. We began practicing ceremony. And we just really immersed ourselves in our culture, and we decided to make that not just something that we wanted to do at that point in time, but that is the way we wanted to live and we want our son to live.
Do you find that that's difficult from time to time with today's society?
Actually, no. It's a part of my life, and I make it a part of my life, and I have really not had any problem with doing that. Most people that know me totally support me in that, so actually, no, it's actually been wonderful.
Well, good. And with everything that's going on in today's world, how do you maintain those connections to your cultural roots today?
Well, fortunately, we live kind of out in the mountains, in the woods. We're able to grow things. We are able to make things. My dad has really, in the past 5 to 10 years, has really become a really good instrument maker. He makes rattles and even Native American tools, traditional tools, all sorts of different arts and crafts. And we are able to do that by just walking in the mountains around our house. We find turtle shells, we find feathers. Most things that we make are from things that we actually find or grow, like gourds and things like that. So because that we are really in touch with nature and always have been, to be able to be more traditional, I guess, came easier than for most people.
And being in touch with nature is a very important thing in the Native community.
It is. It's really, I think, it's a love of nature, because Native Americans realized early on that nature and this world was created for us to survive, not just for us to use up. And because of that, I feel like we have a respect and more of a relationship with nature, and more of a love of nature, instead of just this has been given for us to use, and we're going to use it as much as we possibly can, and when we use it up, we're going to try to find something else.
Move on to something
we're
else.
We're
going to
move on. So.
Okay. You spoke of your family earlier, your grandparents particularly,
mm-hmm.
and you say that they came from Hawkins, Tennessee.
Yes.
Area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did they, when they moved to Kentucky during the Civil War, did they come into the area where your family has grown up and where you live today?
Yes, we are still right there, pretty close. We were living in the edge of Harlan County, that's very near Leslie County. The Rogers/Belchers family came from Hawkins County, Tennessee, and they settled in the Harlan, Bell, Leslie border. It's all right there together. And there was a particular area, very remote area of Leslie County called Middle Fork. And my great-great-grandfather at one time owned a lot of land in that area. And Middle Fork is a little mountain community that actually I can remember it not having, there was no television, there was no phones, and a lot of people, even in the mid-70s, did not have running water. So it was very primitive. The roads now are paved. They've been paved about 5 to 10 years, about 2000, okay. They were paved. And then there is another area where my grandmother actually lived and raised, the neighboring community called, we call it Phipps's Fork, but it's Phillips Fork. They still do not have paved roads. So it was a very primitive area and not a lot of outside influence at all.
Would you consider those areas what folks would typically think of Appalachian communities when they think of Appalachian communities?
I think so. They're not all like that. We have subdivisions and things like that. But when you think of the traditional Appalachian neighborhood or mountain community, Middle Fork and Phipps's Fork was it. Absolutely. Just little small farmhouses, an occasional church. Sometimes the church was used as a school, and maybe a general store. And that's about it.
So kind of describe what it was like growing up there.
I didn't actually grow up in Middle Fork. My father did, and my grandparents. They moved, and I was raised in a place called Straight Creek, which was just a little bit more advanced. It was closer to the city of Harlan, although we had to cross Pine Mountain to get there. By the time I was born, which was 1969, the road, I think, had been paved by then, but it hadn't been paved very long. We had one channel of television. We had telephones that people called party lines, so we would have to take turns using it. So we were still very primitive, but I absolutely loved being raised at Straight Creek and growing up. I can't imagine a better place to have been a kid than Straight Creek and being raised with my grandparents.
So say that must have really given you an opportunity to truly learn from your grandparents in that type of community with family there really close.
Well, everyone was related basically. And if we weren't related, we knew each other personally. So yeah, there was just a really great sense of community. And I lived beside of my grandparents, but I mostly lived with my grandparents. My mom and dad went to school when I was five, so I moved in with my grandparents, and I never fully made the move back until I was in my late teens. So I really got a lot of influence from my grandmother and my grandfather.
And what do you remember a couple of the biggest things that they taught you, particularly as it relates to your native heritage growing up?
Well, the first thing that I thought of when you said that was just simply pride. How absolutely proud my grandfather was that he was Cherokee. I hear so many people talk about how their grandparents want to kind of hide it, and, well, we are this, but don't tell anyone. That was never like that with my grandfather really at all, or anybody in that community. It was always something to be proud of. Besides that, I guess I always think of the gardening, how to preserve food. I can remember my grandmother sewing, and I remember how she gardened, which was just kind of sporadically here and there. And then my grandfather, he wanted everything perfect, and he even had a string to make sure everything was perfect, and then she'd go along and drive him crazy by just planting things everywhere. So I guess really that's the one thing I learned is the food, the growing of the food, the gathering of the food, poke salad, the different greens. We had mushrooms that we would just go out and find and eat and call them hickory chickens. I think they're called morels, really.
Yes.
And just different things, berries. My grandmother could prepare food out of all these different wild herbs. She could even make medicine out of ginseng, yellow root. She would combine all these things. So all those things just stuck with me.
And she passed a lot of that on to you, I would think.
She did. Absolutely. You know, when I think of living a good way, I think of my grandmother. And I think, you know, if I'm living like Susie, which is what I called her, then I'm okay. I'll be okay if I'm living like her. And if I'm not, then I need to start thinking about what I'm doing and my priorities.
Well, I can really sense that whole sense of pride and belonging that you have when you talk about your family and your heritage, and so that's really a great thing. There's a huge push across the country, across the world today, to be self-sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sounds exactly like where you came from, that you were given those gifts early on.
I really was. I think my family were environmentalists and really didn't even, before that, I guess that was even a word.
Before that was cool, right?
Yeah. My father, my aunts, my uncles, we totally believed in that. And we could see what was happening in the early 70s. Mm. My father said even before that, as far as the destruction of the mountains, the pollution of the water. My dad, I heard him talking just Saturday about how he knew that when a railroad was built, what was going to happen. And he said, sure enough, our little creek by our house just turned brown.
Mm.
And nothing was ever the same again.
I was going to ask you, because growing up there in the Appalachian region, then, you know, such a big part of that is coal mining.
Yes.
Mountaintop removal type mm-hmm. coal mining. And so how was that perceived in your family?
It was perceived as the enemy. None of my family was in the coal industry whatsoever. Most of my family were teachers. My mother was a nurse, and before that, most people just lived off the land and farmed. Most were bootleggers, moonshiners. On the other hand, when I married my husband, I married into a coal mining family. His grandparents were coal miners. His father was a coal operator. His brother was a coal operator and is a coal operator. And that was very hard. It was very hard to you know, meet an understanding or an agreement with the way I feel about things. But as I get older, I realize that it's okay to have views. They have their views and I have mine. And I cannot say terrible things about the coal mining industry, because that is how so many people make a living. I don't have a whole lot against deep mining, but I will actively speak out against the mountaintop removal and the strip mining, because I saw firsthand what it did to my community and what it is doing to my community still. And there is no way I can support that type of destruction. My husband is aware of it. He actually, he agrees with me. And my son wholeheartedly agrees with me. And his family respects my opinion. And that's all I ask.
Well, and that sounds like you really do have a nice balancing there, that within your family that you can at least have those conversations. So that's,
yeah,
I think, a
we
good
can.
Thing.
It's okay. And it's, I think that, you know, like I said, there are two sides of every story. And I do understand the coal mining tradition of Harlan County. Some people are so proud of that. And it was a way of life for many, many years. I think that right now people are realizing that maybe the coal miners did not benefit near as much as they thought they were.
Sure.
We have cancer, heart disease. Our water is contaminated. We are getting all these strange cancers in Harlan County. And it wasn't quite as beneficial, I think, as we thought it was. And I think on down the road, we're going to realize that much, much more.
The short-term effects surely outweigh the, or the long-term effects outweigh the short-term.
And I don't think we've actually seen the destruction that the coal industry has brought to our mountains.
Well, let me ask you this. On your Native American side, how are traditions passed on?
The only way traditions have been passed on in my family is word of mouth, oral tradition, and teaching. The old teaching the young, just as my grandparents, and I must add, my father has taught me so much, and how to use natural resources, how to not waste things. When he goes turkey hunting, we eat the turkey, and then we use every part of it. And a lot of times we go through the woods and we pick up bones, deer antler, turtle shell, and we use it instead of just letting it go to waste.
And your father's name?
My father's name is Cale Saylor Jr.
Okay. And have you passed on traditions?
I hope so. I hope so. Every time I go in the schools, I try to leave a little bit of myself there, and I hope that I'm passing on pride of everyone's heritage, Native American or not. I hope that I do show children that we don't have to be so wasteful, that we can use everything. We really talk about that, and by the end of I show them my gourd rattles and turtle shell rattles, and then by the end of the week, they're bringing in rattles made out of aluminum cans and water bottles, because I talk about how we need to quit throwing these in the landfill. And so I do. I think that I'm passing on the tradition that way, and I hope I'm teaching my son. I think I am. And I think his father is, and my father is as well.
Okay, well, good. We talked earlier about the difficulties with today's society and trying to follow some of the traditions that have been passed on to you. With the busy work schedules and school schedules, do you find that it's sometimes difficult to work in some of those more important ceremonies and things like that?
Oh, yeah. There's been several times that I've had to send my husband, and he's had to send me just to represent the family. That's just... Sorry, I have no idea who that was.
That was Darla's cell
that
phone, by the way.
I'm sorry, that was my mom. Let me turn this off so she won't do it again. Okay, the question was, oh, sorry, there it went again. This is going to be great. Okay. It is hard in today's society to do all this, and actually I think that at one point in Cherokee society there was a whole lot more ceremonies. I'm thinking between 8 and 12. Now there is just 3 with a winter gathering. So it is being adjusted, I think, tribally to try to meet today's busy schedules. And then, yes, it is very difficult. We just attended spring bread ceremony. We do plan attending green corn and fall bread, but you never know. But right now it looks like we're going to be able to attend all 3. That's rare. Usually at some time one of us is going to have to miss, and that's just an understanding. But really what we do, we don't have to have a formal ceremony. A lot of times as a family or even with friends, we'll just get together, we'll burn sage, and some cedar and maybe tobacco and just play some music and sing and maybe dance if we want. I think that most ceremonies are impromptu anyway. I think that most times the most meaningful ones are just when you're out and just decide to just thank the Creator for where you're at and what's going on. So you don't have to have a, just like I always say, you don't have to be in a church to worship. I think that where we're at right now in nature is the greatest place to have ceremony and worship.
Absolutely. There are generations of Native Americans, here in Kentucky. Many of those, their family, like we said earlier, have not really acknowledged their heritage, or maybe many Kentuckians don't even know they have Native heritage. So what are your thoughts about the requirement for documentation and blood quantums?
I don't like blood quantums. Someone told me once that that's usually only in animals and Indians, and I kind of feel that way. Either you are or you aren't. And I think that if you have a drop of blood, of Native American blood, that you have the right and the privilege to celebrate your heritage. I think that the documentation of family history is a necessary evil in today's society, because at one point it was something that was in some families kept a secret. In recent years, it seems that everyone lots of people claim Native American heritage for all sorts of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to make sure that Native Americans aren't being exploited, I think that a certain amount of documentation is necessary. I don't think it's always been. And I think a lot of people in Kentucky claim Native American heritage, and I think they're right. I think they're absolutely right. I think a lot of people in Kentucky are Native American and don't realize it.
And do you think that, what do you think, if you could go back and have a conversation with your grandmother, what would she say about that issue?
I think that, well, my grandmother was very tolerant, and she'd say if they wanna be one of us and if they wanna become one of us, let them join us, the more the merrier. But that's exactly what she would say. You know, leave people alone, let them practice how they wanna practice, let them live how they wanna live. But I don't think she saw a lot of other things. She was raised in a time and a place where it wasn't being exploited.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she would think everybody should. And then in a way, yeah, maybe so. I think that the Native American culture is so beautiful and so spiritual. So many people would love to be a part, and I think they should be.
Absolutely.
But when they start claiming that they are healers and taking people's money, when they start writing Native American books on religion and spiritualism, they need to back up who they are and what authority they have to put out something like that.
Absolutely. Have you ever found yourself discriminated against because of your heritage?
Discriminated against, maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. I really look Native American. Sometimes people confuse me with being Latin or Polynesian. Every so often I feel possibly I'm being somewhat discriminated against. Not a lot. I get a lot of stereotypical things kind of happening with me that might offend some people, but really I just kind of let it go.
Could you describe some of those maybe?
People think it's okay, and it is okay in an extent if they're my friends, to say, well, you look just like Pocahontas, then start calling me that. Some people will walk up and say, you look just like an Indian. One woman walked up to me and said, I can't tell the difference between Mexican and Indians. I didn't know how to respond to that. So just different things like that. I'm trying to think of other things. A lot of times in the Cherokee, North Carolina area, I am assumed to be a resident over there. And I have found, strangely enough, that I do get a little bit more discriminated over there by the store owners, not Native American. The store owners and things, I'm a little bit ignored.
Oh, really?
And that makes me wonder how maybe the residents of that area feel.
Yeah. That's interesting. So now, you also said, you currently sit on the Kentucky Native American Heritage Commission.
Yes.
And so, describe how that's been for you.
That has really been a wonderful experience. I have really enjoyed that, and that's something that I take seriously and I'm very proud of. It makes me really proud to know that Kentucky is really supporting and acknowledging the Native people of Kentucky. And to be able to work with planning out different Native events and Native activity that's going on within the state of Kentucky, that's something that I really do take seriously.
And you've been on there for how long now?
It has been, I'm thinking, 3 years.
Okay.
I think 2007 is when I was appointed.
Okay. And what's one of the best events you've been involved in with the commission?
I think really the best one was Native American Day in Frankfort, where Native people gathered in the rotunda and were actually recognized, and not just recognized, but celebrated. I thought that was just a really wonderful event. Cherokee was sang in the rotunda. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was a first or not, but it was pretty rare, I would say. And the fact that there was beautiful Native American arts and crafts in the display, I thought that was just really, really a wonderful thing.
That was in November of 08?
Was it 08?
Or 09?
No, it was
08,
08,
wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
Well, as we start to wrap up this conversation, is there anything else you'd like to share with the folks here in Kentucky and around the globe that may listen to this interview at some point about Native American culture and heritage here today in the year 2010?
Well, as an Appalachian Native American in Kentucky, my main goal for this interview and throughout my life is to just let people know that we are here, regardless to history books and what other people say. There is a large group of Native Americans in eastern and southeastern Kentucky who are proud of who they are and living the way that their ancestors have before them.
And your family's living proof that they've been here for quite some time.
We've been here for quite some time, and we shall remain.
Well, thank you very much for this conversation today, Darla.
Well, thank you, Scotty.